think we'll go ahead and get started. And like I said, I don't know if people will be coming and going. We just won't worry about it. We'll just keep on going. Those who are here, and we'll just enjoy what we got to talk about and learn. Father, thank you for this time, and set our minds at rest this morning, that we might be resting and trusting in you in all things. We recognize that life throws us curves at times, and we also recognize that it throws you no curves, that these things are all ordained by you for our good and for your glory, and we thank you for that. We pray for our time this morning, that we might focus on our material, that we might profit and be blessed by it. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Last week we began looking at some of the different proverbs, and in particular character traits that are talked about in proverbs, and we did just kind of a quick flyby in each of the different character traits, and basically did a review of a lesson I taught on proverbs, only a much more condensed lesson. And then at the end we always ask the question, how does this apply to our kids? So we're going to continue in that vein for a while until we decide it's not profitable for us. I did some reflecting. Last week was interesting to me. We kicked off this list last week, and I wanted to go through the first two because I thought they were more all-encompassing of what Proverbs is about and how character traits work and all how they relate back to wisdom and the fear of the Lord. And then I gave you all, you know, first shot, what do you want to cover? And you could pick anything on the list. And everybody seemed to jump on anger right away. Like, that was, yeah, we want to cover anger, definitely. And I was particularly intrigued by the fact that the discussion was quite lively about anger. And even though we were looking at applying it to our kids, it seemed like everybody had the subject on their mind in terms of themselves. So I kind of wondered, and this is an option for you. See, I'm already giving you a bunch of choices. I'm going to throw one more in the mix for you. I was asked afterwards, you know, I have trouble with anger. How do you deal with anger? I mean, is it just enough to control your temper and not fly off the handle, or is there more? And that's a very good question. And so I answered it, and, you know, we went on. But the option is, we could look a little more at that subject this morning. I'm not saying we're going to turn into a series on anger or something like that, but just as a kind of a response to the interest that was shown. Or we could just go on and pick another topic and say, hey, we're good. anybody have an opinion about that? Or a couple of you, you know, don't feel shy. I don't mind. It won't hurt my feelings if you say no. We're good.
I felt like I needed more.
Okay.
And I also have a child with it, but he was sitting right beside me, so I didn't want to say anything.
Yes.
And I would like him to hear it. They should be on their way, but... Oh,
I understand. Well,
But he is just like me. We have the same personality and all of that.
Yeah.
So if he erupts, I erupt.
Yeah.
And I finally learned, stop, let the calm parent take care of it. And that has worked, but because I'm doing more damage than
yeah.
I'm doing good. And I'm not setting a good example when I get angry.
Yeah. Well, let's look at a little bit. Again, we're not going to turn this into a series. We might not even go the whole class. We might get back to our list and move on at that point. But I had a few thoughts, and I'm not by any means going to sit here and pose as some kind of expert on anger. I'm not. I can tell you, as a young man, I had a tremendous anger problem, and I had a very difficult time controlling my temper. And so that's how I started out. Now, over the years, I've gotten to where I almost, in some ways, I've developed, I don't know how this happened, but I actually personally, and I suppose there are other people like this, but it surprises people sometimes. I have the ability when I get really angry. This is not something I do consciously. My system sort of automatically shuts down my emotions or something like that. And I'm not feeling anything. I feel sort of numb. And I get into a super cerebral mode. And it's kind of weird. And some people are surprised. They're in a situation where I think I would just be flaming angry. And I'm sitting there being very... intellectual and cerebral and controlled, and they're like, wow, how's he doing that? You know, And then later, after the event, the feelings catch up with me and I start to feel the anger and things like that, but I'm out of the situation at least. I'm talking about if I'm in a situation like at work or even in a church environment where I'm suddenly confronted with some things that really upset me or make me angry, I shut things down. I don't know if that's a good response. There's one thing good about it. I'm not losing control and not losing my temper, so that's good. That's just a little about me. And so anyways, I didn't really get this into a PowerPoint. This is part of my technology dilemma this morning. I just have it in a Word document. This is off the top of my head. I just jotted some notes to myself as a kind of reminder so I wouldn't forget things. So let me just throw these out here. This is like everything else in this class, open discussion format or whatever. If you all want to interact, ask questions, make your own comments, feel free to disagree, what have you. I gave the scriptures last week for anger and the good side of anger, the bad side of anger. And what I'm dealing with here is dealing with your own unrighteous anger. So we're not looking at righteous anger. We talked about that last week. And we're not particularly looking at what do you do with somebody else who loses their temper or has an anger problem. We're talking about dealing with your own anger problem and in the unrighteous area. So that's the focus. So here are some thoughts. If you lose your temper, you know, you're in a situation that something happens, anger flashes, and either you lose your temper or you start to feel you're about to lose your temper. You put either one of those. As much as possible, avoid venting or giving full expression to your anger. I know there's a school of thought that says, you know, let it out, you know, express it. I disagree with that. I don't think those people have the scriptures on their side. I really don't. I think that the scriptures admonish us to control ourselves. You say, wasn't that hypocritical? No. It's self-control. And it's admirable. And it's desirable. Now, do you have to shut down your emotions like I do? And again, I don't do that consciously. I don't know about that. But certainly, the ideal is not to flare up. Because here's what happens. If you give vent to your anger, it generates more anger. It stirs it up. If I might use a crass example, that'd be like saying, if you have a problem with lust, you know, read some porn and get it out. Really? No. What would that do if you did that, if you took that approach? It's going to inflame more. So I think from any angle, at least from a biblical Christian standpoint, avoid as much as possible. And again, I realize there are practical limitations, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. So the next thing is do everything you can to exercise self-control and restrain yourself. So that's don't give vent, try to self-control, try to restrain yourself. Remove yourself from the situation that's causing the anger and give yourself some time to cool down. Our angers are kind of like a, you know, we've all boiled water on the stove in a tea kettle, you know, if you got one of those whistling tea kettles, you know. Well, when you turn the fire off, the water's still boiling, isn't it? And you wouldn't want to touch it for a while. It's kind of the way anger works by my observation. And don't think you can just, you know, I've got it under control, and we're good now. You need to give yourself time because you're not thinking rationally. Your anger is influencing you a lot. Your best bet is to graciously get out of the situation. If you're in an argument with your spouse, you know, Sandy and I encounter this. One or the other of us becomes angry, hot-tempered, out of control. Hey, we need to time out. Let's resume later. Because otherwise, if you try to press on in that situation, even if the person's controlling their anger, they're not like throwing things across the room or you know, physically attacking you. Their mind is so stirred up with anger and angry thoughts that the conversation has not only is it not productive, it's actually extremely counterproductive. And more things are said that cause more anger and more hurt, and then there's more anger. And it's a vicious cycle. And so that it's best to shut it down. And the same with your kids, I think. That's why some people say, well, what if, you know, you're in a situation the kid's just throwing a fit and so forth. There may need to be a cool down time. Have them go to their room for a couple hours or whatever you think appropriate, and then come back together when when the tea kettle, after the flame's been turned off, the water has time to come back to room temperature. And yeah, maybe it'll flare back up again. That can happen. But at least you get a fair running start at it. You try to attack it while you're hot, boy, I think you're going to find that does not work. It does not work. Again, my experience. One more comment here, and I'll kind of open up for some comments before we move on to the next part. So I'm advising cool down, calm down, and don't vent. But I'm going to say controlling your temper is a short-term solution. Ultimately, you must deal with the source of your anger. So you've got unfinished work. Recognize that. You don't have to get it done today. Maybe you don't get it done this year. I don't know. I mean, the sooner the better, of course. But you've got unfinished work. You want to get to the bottom of what happened. If it's with the person, or a lot of times just with yourself, honestly. It's just with yourself. And you want to get it sorted out in a realistic, biblical, God-honoring way. You really want to do that. So it's temporary. It's putting a Band-Aid on it. All right, let me open it up. We're going to talk about how you do deal with it long-term, or at least I'm just going to give you some practical ideas that I have about it, and we'll open it up at the end of that one as well. Anybody want to ask anything, throw anything in, or whatever, before we go on to the next idea?
The cool down time that you were talking about. I know a lot of preschools, since we have a lot of preschool age kids here, have like a quiet corner or whatever where you can, it's like a safe place for them when they get angry to go and cool down before the teacher talks with them kind of about the situation. And one thing that they use is a glitter jar, so you fill a jar with water. You shake it, and they have to sit there until all of the glitter settles at the bottom.
Okay.
So it gives them kind of a visual for, okay, this is how long I need to be here, and then, you know, and of course reassess it as needed. I don't know, that's just a practical thing that I was thinking about for the parents here that have real young kids.
Yeah.
Give them more of a visual for how long. And apparently when the kids watch the glitter, it helps to calm them down anyway.
Interesting. That sounds like a practical way. Because, again, we're recognizing that, humanly speaking, you know. Now, I'll tell you, you know, when we talked last week, I said, you know, Sandy would have problems. We had a couple of boys, the two younger ones, who, generally speaking, did well over the years and so forth. But they did both have a good bit of a temper issue when they were younger, and especially with Mom. And I would come home, and temper ended very quickly. Don't know how that happened exactly. I think, though, in that situation, I created a new emotion called fear. And fear overcame anger. Now, that's my assessment of what happened. I'm not a psychologist or anything, but that's my assessment of what was going on. Sandy, who, she was a good disciplinarian and a good mom, but she didn't have the fear factor that I had as a dad. Just didn't. She worked on it, but it was just tough for her. And the kids, they, you know, moms especially, as a general rule, I'm generalizing, moms tend to have a soft spot, they tend to have a weakness, and kids, they sense that, man. They sense it instinctively. I don't know if they think it through, maybe they do, but they sense it at some level, and they'll play it. They really will. And, or if you're a dad that has a temper issue, I'm sure they could do the same thing. I'm not going to exclusively say that's moms, but. So if you can't overcome with the fear factor like I was able to do with the boys, then you may have to come up with it. And Sandy even talked to me about, Bob, I just can't, you know, I'm not going to let them get away with it, but we've got to have some way to work through this that works. But we're not letting them, you know, just throw a temper tantrum anytime that something doesn't go their way. But we're gonna give them some time. And so we came up with some things along that line. So. Another comment or question or idea or? Yeah.
Many times with the moms, what happens is we're with the kids so much and we lose our
tempers so much.
Yeah.
For any kid, they just
oh, yeah.
Oh, that's mom's speech number 1,500.
Yep.
That refers to the same thing I did. And
yep.
I speak from experience because my mom was so she came on to us. And I could only count, I think, maybe five times in my entire life that I ever, ever saw my dad lose his temper. And in those times, it was enough to scare the life out of you because you just, it was so uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
And there was that.
Yeah.
But with mom, yes, we feared her, but not in the same way. It was just too commonplace.
Yeah.
That for me, that's my fault. It's too commonplace for me. So my children, I'm like, why am I repeating myself 10 times? Your dad tells you once and you jump on it.
Yeah.
It's because they've learned to ignore it. They've learned to tune me out. And that bugs me and just causes that anger to start stirring. So it has to start with me before my kids will then start to pick up on it. And if something is not commonplace, their ears perk up at it a lot faster.
Yeah.
Than if they just keep hearing the same thing, the same tone of voice, the same reprimands over and over and over again. It's human nature. Right?
Yeah, and that is something you do lose. The shock factor can sometimes work. That's that I referenced it, and you all were of another generation, so you weren't familiar with it, the Cheech and Chong class. I'm going to play that some morning for you. I have it on my machine. Maybe we'll play it. But the teacher would use a shock value of yelling at and the kids were so shocked by it. But eventually the shock wears off. Of course, as a mom, when you're there day in, day out, any shock factor you have is going to wear off eventually. So, yeah. All right. Well, let me. Is there anything else? Good suggestions and comments. Yes?
I do have another question.
Okay.
What do you do? That type of a question. You're a mother, you're at home, husband's off working, you have discipline issues to deal with, and you know you have an anger issue.
Yeah.
So you're just not going to deal with it? Or what are you going to do?
Well, we've talked about that a little bit. What I suggest is that you got to deal with it, obviously. But one suggestion I've given is tell the kid to go to their room, and you're going to deal with them in a time period. Yeah, I'll be up in a little bit. You wait for me in your room. Just something to buy you some time.
Okay.
Something to buy you some time.
Okay.
Again, it's the time factor that eats you on a temper situation.
Do you think that a majority of the discipline issues would fall into a category like that? Now, I know there. I guess what I'm saying. I know there will be, but I don't know if it's an exception. I would say I know there's exceptions where. You don't have time to put them in a room. You got to deal with this now. Or so the judgment would be made.
Yeah.
The mother. We're going to call that an exception to the rule. I'm not sure it is, but let's just go there for now.
Okay.
Based on that, what do you suggest?
Based on if it's
the
a situation
where. You deal with it now. You don't have time to wait.
Like, fill me in. Give me an example, because I'm trying to picture what that would look like.
I would think that, I'll do the best I can to paint a picture.
Yeah, okay.
A toddler, or maybe a little bit older, 3, 4 years old, 5, I don't know, is in a rage and just throwing stuff everywhere, maybe being able to do damage, maybe even fearful of hurting himself. How are you going to put that in a room? Wait on it. What do you do something like that? Temper tantrum, maybe that's...
I have one little suggestion that works for me because Jaden can get very aggressive when he is having a fit.
Good
and,
words.
Like he will pick up a stool to throw. I mean, like fearful to hurt me, actually. But I have set, to keep myself in check, I have set myself a parameter. I think I may have mentioned this to y'all before, but like when I spank him, even if I'm going to spank him immediately, I will never do, when I, you know, put him on my lap, I will never do more than 2 swats, like, at a time, if that makes sense. So, I mean, so that kind of, that's putting my anger in check. So, if I did pick him up angry and swatted him, I'm not going to do more than 2. If I go beyond 2, I know that I'm too much. So, I kind of give myself, like, it needs to be addressed immediately. He needs to, you know, he needs to have something to snap him and say, you're doing something. And so I have set myself a parameter. Like, I don't ever swat him more than 2 in a row. And, I mean, that's just kind of, for me, something that Yeah, and that's something that's easy for me to remember. Like, I don't ever squat more than twice an
hour. So what you're kind of saying is that you divide it up.
Yes.
You start immediately.
Yes,
and
then
kind of
I
divide
give him
it
a
up
chance.
Over a period of time.
Yeah, and then we kind of see how that works, and then if I need to, I put them on my lap and do two more. But in a swing, I don't ever do two. So, and that's something that I've had to do for myself so that I know. I mean, if I start spanking and I do more than two, then I'm out of control.
That makes sense.
So
I have a question from what you said. So do you feel like Jaden starts to calculate the risk, like, oh, I'm only going to get spanked twice, so I am going to do something silly, like, I am going to disobey?
No, because he knows it'll keep going. Okay. Like, I mean, we'll stop and he'll get more.
Gotcha.
He's even said my hiney's going to be red forever now.
It's okay, look at me. Because I know for us, we've never done that. Like, it's like the punishment will fit the crime type of thing. Like, I mean, today, like, Tabor hit Liam, and then he lied about it. So he got a lot of spanks, especially for the lying thing. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, eventually I'm just like, I can't spank you anymore. And so I didn't know if it was worth, like, if he calculates, it's worth it. Because you know
how it'll keep coming in pairs.
Okay.
Until, and when we get to a point where he's, I know that he's with me, then I'll just say one more. Like, we're going to do one more. Keep your hands down, keep your feet down, let's do this last one, and we're done.
Yeah.
And so that's my favorite kind of spanking. Because I know that we're both in a situation where we see this is just a consequence.
Yeah.
But, and so I don't know if that's necessarily the right thing, but that's something, to address the, if you can't wait, but you want to say all the anger, give yourself a parameter going into it.
Yeah, because sometimes the practicality of a situation sometimes defies your theories.
Yeah.
And you have to hold to the higher principles, which is, you are the parent, you must discipline, and you can't let them, get to a point where they know they can get away with something by pushing the right button. But sometimes the outworking of that in practical terms, you come up with a spanking budget or something, two at a time or two every minute or whatever, whatever you work out. Like I said, Sandy and I had to work out some things sometimes that gave her a chance to buy some time. But we're still holding to the overall principles. And you're not just using it as an excuse to not spank kind of thing. Because we've made a big deal about that. But, in the practical outworking, sometimes you get in a situation and it's hard to anticipate what came up, and you're suddenly going, boy, I don't remember that in the book, or I don't remember us talking about that in the class. Those things happen, and then here you are, you're the parent, you're in a situation, you got to decide, and it's no different than a general on the battlefield, and the other army pulls out some weapon they weren't expecting. He doesn't get to go back and study, his war manuals. At that point, he has to punt. He has to do something. Or a coach is in a football game, another team. All of us in life, as we encounter the practical situation, we have to punt. We have to make those decisions. And don't beat up on yourself for that. Just, work through it with your spouse later. Think about it. Always be thinking through what you're doing and trying to do better with it. And I think, that you'll have God's blessing in that. So. Yeah.
He sees me do it. I wish he would one time pipe up and tell me what I'm telling him when he gets angry. And that is just getting down and looking at him and saying, okay, take a deep breath. Just take a deep breath. Calm yourself down. You have to think about it. You have to focus. There is a problem. And it usually comes out when he's trying to do something and it's meticulous, or it might have math, I don't know. Usually that's when it's like, and I mean, he's like a volcano, and just, it all comes out, and it'll happen at like the weirdest time, but it's usually something he gets so frustrated, not at others, it's himself, and that is me, and just that, I'm so mad, and it's like, you have to learn, you can think clearer, think more rationally if you just calm down. But many times, Sal, when we're out and about, that's what I feel. It's like that volcano building, and then, just if I open my mouth, So mine is, my parents, I shut down. Everything yeah. just shuts down because I've learned growing up, if I open my mouth, I'm in trouble. But I wish if I could keep that in the forefront of my mind, just like as soon as I see it happening in him, it's a reminder, take a deep breath. And then you're not literally counting, but in a sense, you are counting down the seconds until all of a sudden he's able to breathe calmly, and then he picks up his pencil or whatever it might be, and he's able to just sit. Because you let it go. You have to make yourself let that tension go, but not where it's opening up and spewing out or becoming violent, which, like you were saying, feeds the violence. It's a different way. It's showing self-restraint, self-control, and I can control yeah. my emotions. I can control how I'm physically reacting to something, and that, in turn, it helps you control the emotions, the thought process of it, and repeating, I can do this, I can do this. But, yeah, I wish I had somebody there walking around with me telling me, take a deep breath, just yeah. calm down.
Well, I don't. This might sound trite, but and I'll come up with it later as one of the ways of dealing with anger is, I encourage you to do what David does in the Psalms sometimes is talk to yourself, and I talk to myself all the time. Now, some people think that's weird, although a lot of people do it. But I don't mean just like, although I actually do carry on conversations, imaginary conversations, and so forth. My wife will. She'll hear me in the bathroom in the morning getting ready and taking a shower, and I'm just talking away, you know, like there's somebody in there. I'm not necessarily talking about that. That's almost, you know, borderline lunacy, but that's what I do. but this is where a deliberate effort to tell yourself, and I do this as well, and I'll even address myself by my name. Bob, chill out, man. What is your... This is not a big deal. Now, I may not verbalize it. I may just be doing it in my brain. Because I may be in a situation where people be like, who are you talking to? But I will do that in my own mind a lot. And, you know, Bob, you need to get a handle on this. This is not a good situation, you know, or whatever. Or, Bob, take a deep breath. It's not the end of the world. You know, you can do that. And it's amazing. It really, you listen to yourself, you know. So just like David probably listened to himself, he says, why are you so downcast, oh my soul? You know, you're asking yourself questions. Why is this a big deal to you, Bob? You know, and ask, or Amy, or whatever, yeah.
I think one thing that's been helpful, like even just with this class, is like learning with Liam, like he's having to learn how to work through that. Like, it, like not only am I having to discipline, and he's having to learn discipline, oh, these are my no's, these are my yeses, but even just learning, okay, here's how you calm down. I'm so angry, how do I talk myself down? Having to teach him how to do that. And even like Natalie, you mentioned the little glitter thingies. Like, I think if, like, when we had Tabor and we were starting timeouts, if we had to teach him how to be in timeout, like, because like he doesn't just know, okay, sure, yeah, Mom, a timeout, what's the concept? Like, he doesn't even know. He's like, I had to teach him what a timeout is. And then, like, for the second one, I already just expect Liam to know what a timeout is. But, you know, like, gotta start over. He has to learn what a timeout is, too. And so, even with
I know Sandy has probably shared this with a couple of you because it was one of her favorite little things. It really worked with our youngest son. She had a real hard time talking to him about what he did. He would just react and get emotional and so forth. So she would sit down with him and tell him stories about the little boy. And, of course, she'd be telling the story about what he said. Now, we got up this morning, and the little boy didn't like that Mom didn't fix him this. And so the little boy, you know what the little boy did? He goes, huh? He got mad and started throwing his toys across the room. He goes, that's me. No. It's just the little boy. This is the little boy. No, it's me. No, it's the little boy. Now listen to what the little boy did. You know, and she would go through the whole story. And so the little boy's mother became angry, and the little boy spanked him. And he even got more angry. That's me. No, it's the little boy. You know, and she goes, but what she was doing there, and this is the weirdest thing, but he knew darn well it was him. Of course, he kept saying that. And she kept denying it. But she was forcing him to look at his behavior in the third person. And it got rid of the personal edge to it. And he was able to process it and realize the little boy was being pretty stupid or being pretty sinful or whatever, you know. And he could buy that. And that really helped him process. That's weird. It was creative, but it worked. And I'm not going to say that's a, you know, put that in the standard parenting manual. All parents need to do that. But she came up with that as a way to try to depersonalize. Because a lot of his anger with our youngest, actually both our youngest boys, was it, when mom did something, it was like it was personal. Like they were personally hurt that mom would do this to them, you know, and it just, it went all over them. Well, they can't have that attitude, sorry. But they did. And so that was kind of one way she had to deal with it. Well,
that,
go ahead.
I can't believe they did that to me. Now, there's your source, you pride.
Yes.
So I'm back to the source again.
Yes.
Are we going to get to the source?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Let me move on a little bit here because I want to see if we can get to some of the solutions as far as dealing with anger long term. So we'll discuss this a little bit. Huh, that's kind of funny.
Oh, it's lighting back up.
Okay, I guess it cooled down a little bit, so it'll come up. So dealing with your anger long term. Well, here's some things about that.
Should we?
Huh?
Let's just get back a little bit, make it bigger.
Ah, okay. There you go. Thank you. Couple of ideas on this. I think it's important to admit to yourself and others if appropriate, and that has to be weighed up. Sometimes it's appropriate, sometimes it's not. But certainly, at least admit to yourself that you're angry. And that might sound kind of stupid, like, well, yeah, but just bear with me on this. We don't like to admit that we're angry sometimes. We like to feel like and have others believe that we're better than that. Now, that's one reason we don't like to admit it. Another reason we don't like to admit it is sometimes we don't want others to know they've gotten to us. So in other words, if you can do something to make me angry, if you can push a button, you know, push my buttons, as they say, and it makes me angry every time you do it, and I admit that, even to myself, it's in a sense I'm admitting you have a sort of power over me. I don't like that. You know, it feels stronger if I say, no, I'm not mad. I'm not angry. You can't make me mad. You didn't make me, you know. But if you're angry, be aware that you may try to hide it from yourself. At least acknowledge it yourself, because you can't begin to deal with it if you don't acknowledge it's a problem. So that's one thought. I find that most unrighteous anger is a result of believing a lie of some sort. And the lie might start with, I have a right to, dot, 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 or I shouldn't have to, dot, dot, dot. And it can be the dumbest lie if you stop and think about it. I gave this example last week, and I'll bring it up as one of the lies. I'm in a parking lot, and I spot an open spot over there, and I like to park close to the door. So I said, there's a spot, and I start to drive over there. And somebody else is a little bit closer. They come down and they go right in the spot just as I was about to get there. And I become angry with that person for occupying that spot. What's the lie that I've told myself?
That it was your spot. That
was my spot. I have a right to that spot. How dare you take my spot? Boy, that's dumb. What do you mean it's your spot? It's an open parking spot. And he actually had the right because whoever's closest, first come, first serve, right? That's what would have been my rule. If I'd have been him and he was me, and he got mad at me, I'd be like, what's wrong with you? I was here, you know. So, but we'll believe things like that. Yeah.
I want to give you a quick extreme to that.
Okay.
I watched a guy park when another guy wanted a spot. He had to go no more than 7 to 10 spaces back. No, I'm sorry. He was waiting for someone to pull out of a spot closer at a Walmart, and yeah, they weren't pulling out. They were just sitting in their car. He got aggravated and pulled around into the same area, but it was about maybe 10 spaces back and started walking up. Right when he was walking up, they started backing out. And oh my goodness, he started swearing the vulgarity and everything, and the hatred directed at the person in that car. They couldn't even hear him, but he's just like, you know, oh, now you pull out, you know, having this conversation in his head that was just so vulgar and so angry because he had to park 10 spots back.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wow.
Yeah. Well, we do it all the time. We lie to ourselves about things. We tell ourselves, you know, we shouldn't have to put up with kids that misbehave, or we shouldn't have to be interrupted when we wanted to sit down and watch our favorite program. I should be able to watch my favorite program once without interruption. Says who? You know, of course you want to. I understand that. But think about what you're telling yourself a lot of times, or, you know, I should have a husband who's willing to do that, or a wife that's willing, you know, and it goes on and on. Sandy and I have found that we have some of our biggest arguments, our biggest whopper arguments, guess when? On vacation. Because why? We have expectations for vacation. I'll tell you a kind of an extreme story, and it's a true story. Years ago, when we didn't have very much money, hardly had two nickels to rub together, and I had four kids, and my two youngest guys were cute little boogers, and they were just the right age where I thought, we're going to take a trip to Disney World. And I could just envision the two little boys with stars in their eyes and seeing Mickey Mouse and all this stuff, and, oh, it's going to be so fun. And I just dreamed about this vacation. And I began setting aside a little bit of money out of my paycheck every week. I saved for it for years, looking forward to this vacation. Then when the time approached, we went out and rented a video on what Disney World was like, get gin up some excitement, you know, the whole deal. So now I'm telling myself that this is going to be the greatest vacation ever. That was a lie, by the way. In fact, I was telling myself I have a right to the greatest vacation ever because I saved my money, darn it, all these years, and I planned this, and I thought about it. It's the right thing to do, and I have these kids, and that, you know, and it was this complex of lies that I, and it's, of course, again, it's nothing wrong with wanting to do that. You understand. But meantime, I had two older kids who were several years older, and the oldest one was going through one of his trouble stages. In fact, he had been out of the home for a while. It was a runaway situation. It was a mess. And anyway, he just came back at home just in time for a vacation. Yay! And so the entire time we were at Disney World, every time I'd go to show him some exciting thing or something like that, he would come in and roll his eyes with cynicism and say, that's boring. That's stupid. And guess what the little kids did looking up the big brother? Yeah, that's boring. That's stupid. And I just watched my dreams crash. And I was so, so angry. And finally, this went on the whole week. And I kept it down and so forth. You know, just kept trying to keep things going. And we were on the way home. It was spring break week. And traffic lines were long. I was sitting there stuck in traffic. And then they started, and then the older boy started poking at the young one. Daddy, he's poking me! You know, that kind of stuff. And finally, at one point, I just blew a gasket, and I stepped on the brake so hard. I meant to step on the brake kind of hard for effect, which is I'm not recommending as a discipline practice. I'm just telling you what I did. And but I didn't realize how angry I was, how much adrenaline I had. I stepped on that brake so hard that the truck spun, lost control, and we flew off the road. And everybody went rolling and flopping and flying around the back seat. And we didn't get hurt. We didn't wreck anything. But we really scared all of ourselves. I really scared myself included. And it was a wake-up call for me to see what I just did. And they did get quiet for a while. It worked. No. But again, this complex of lies and building and building and building, you've got to catch yourself doing this. And you have to recognize, well, the thing you have to do is we need to recognize we believe a lie and repent for having believed it in the first place. These are wrong things to believe. And that's how you begin to deal with the underlying cause of the anger. And I've already talked about this. Talk to yourself in a constructive way. Admonish yourself. Another thing is, lower your expectations without lowering standards. This is a big one. You know, to have real high expectations. I'm going to have them come home. Everything's going to be great with the kids. Come on. Are you for real? Now, don't lower your standards. You want the kids to do well. And you're going to expect them to do well. You're going to hold them to a standard, all that. But don't come in expecting everything to be right. Come in expecting everything to be messed up, because it probably will be. And you'd be surprised how much less angry you'd be when you're expecting that. It's yeah.
I've got a firsthand story for that. Every single morning, I don't know why, I wake up angry because I have this expectation that the kids are going to sleep until 8 o'clock and it's not going to be, Mommy, just all of that. Mom, hey, Mom, I'm awake. That's what I'm expecting.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
No.
I don't know why I can get that through my head. But every single morning, I'm like,
Yeah. It's just, you know, you want to believe these things. You can understand why you believe those things and why you want them. We're not blaming ourselves in that sense.
For 27 years, I woke up just on my own, just got ready. Yeah.
But, yeah, just get real. Get real. And we all do it. We all do it. Every one of us do it. So, and one other little just kind of random thought. These are just sort of random stream of consciousness on my part, typing these notes up. But something to think about. We sometimes inappropriately substitute anger for sadness or disappointment because anger feels more powerful. I have caught myself sometimes at this, and Sandy and I have talked about this at times. Sometimes something just makes you sad, or sometimes something just disappoints you. But sadness and disappointment feels vulnerable. And we don't like feeling vulnerable. At least certain personality types don't like feeling vulnerable. We want to feel powerful. And anger is a emotion of power. So you turn that in your... And I'm not saying you do this on purpose, but you can turn it into anger in your mind. Try to catch yourself at that. And try just being sad. If you're sad. Or disappointed. If you're disappointed. Instead of anger. You don't have to be angry every time something disappoints you or makes you sad. It's okay to be sad and be disappointed. So there you go. That's just some random thoughts on my part. More discussion. We got a few minutes left. You guys have been good already. But anybody want to throw some things in on top of that, or add to it, or whatever.
How do you teach them to be sad and not turn it into anger? Because that's what we're dealing with right now. Like, Zoe gets disappointed about something. She can't have her way, so she gets really angry about it instead of just, you know, crying and being upset about it. In fact, she started saying, "I don't want to be sad. I don't want to be sad." And we're like, "Yeah, I don't think that's a good thing to say." So, how do you teach them?
I think it might. Here's just a thought off the top of my head. First reaction, haven't thought it through. But what about if you tell it? You know, it's okay to be sad. Mommy's sad sometimes. It's okay. I don't want to be sad. I want to be sad. Well, it's okay to be sad. And maybe she doesn't buy it then, but just you plant the idea. That's just a thought. I don't know, you know, that might work, or maybe you need to do a little more about that. But and maybe model that. Yeah, I'm definitely not good at modeling that. I like to go to the anger button. You know, that's my natural response. So it's either you know, you guys have seen that. What's the movie Inside Out?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great movie for you know, I know a lot of you have seen that. That's a good one for. Kind of portraying in a picturesque way what goes on with your emotions. and then anger.
Yep. Well, if you don't want to be sad, Philippians, think on these things. Let's talk about what the Lord has done for us.
That's another approach.
If you don't want to be sad, let's be happy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that either. In fact, that may be a good tack to take for a situation like that. But there are legitimate reasons to be sad and disappointed. There's even legitimate reasons to be angry. I mean, we're just focusing on the time when you shouldn't be angry. And I'll remind you that we talked about that. Most of the time, probably, our anger is unrighteous. And even though we're sometimes trying to call it righteous because we just want to justify it. But there is righteous anger, sure. There's emotion, you know, God gave human beings emotions. And God describes his own actions and behavior in terms of emotions. I don't think God experiences his emotions the way we do exactly, but there's at some level that there's something. Our emotions are part of our image of God. We're reflecting God in some way. God talks about being angry. God talks about, you know, things like that. So.
Not at that point, maybe going, you know, when you are sad or whatever, especially if they happen to notice, and they're probably going to notice because, you know, they notice everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they ask you, well, you know, why are you being that way, or why are you crying, or whatever your deal is. You know, why are you sitting there like that, frowning, or something? You can tell them. Well, mommy is sad, and you can explain to them, I'm sad, or I'm disappointed, or something, and they can see that that's an acceptable thing to be.
Yeah.
Without getting out of control. Yeah.
Yeah.
First thing that came to mind whenever we were talking about sadness and how to respond to that was like. The cliche that you might hear in a movie where it's like, if you don't stop crying, I'm going to give you something to cry about.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
That probably doesn't always apply.
Yeah.
You probably don't want to teach them that they can get in trouble for being sad about something.
Yeah, it depends probably on the kind of crying we're talking about.
Yeah.
If it's an angry crying, then what you're really doing is you're addressing their, you know, their throwing a temper or their rebellion. But yeah, if it's just something they're sad about, you know. if you could cry with them. Again, I'm not a very tender-hearted person, unfortunately, so it was hard for me to do that. And in fact, in our, Sandy and I both tend to be a little bit on the cerebral side in terms of our everyday dealings and that sort of thing. And that's not necessarily the model in the sky of perfection. You know, Paul talked about tears and things like that, that we could do that sort of thing with our kids. And some of you as parents and as individuals do that well, and that's a good thing, that your kids see you be sad and cry. Or whatever, legitimately, not just a cry baby, but I mean just somebody is experiencing a sad situation. You can do that, and it models that for them.
But if we're honest with ourselves, how many of us as adults want our children or allow our children to see us when we are sad or vulnerable or crying?
Yeah.
We typically go away and we hide it.
It is a good shock factor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, seeing that sometimes we turn our sadness and disappointment into anger, like I think that is, I mean, that's kind of like an aha moment for me, because I think that's what I do quite a bit at home.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we do get angry, but mine did not turn to anger the other day, and it was just complete, just, I have failed this child, and I just broke down just crying right there in this room, and I mean, he changed like that, and he saw it, and he started crying.
Yeah.
Oh, I was crying.
Because, you know, I mean, he'll see me tear up every once in a while, but I don't think he'd ever just see me just, like, uncontrolled. Yeah. But it stopped him in his tracks. Like, he didn't know. It was the time he picked up the stool. He was about to throw the stool at me. I mean, it got a little shock factor too. But it was a good conversation after. Like, I could tell him, you know, why I was sad. And then go through pretty much the gospel again with him of, like, my job is to teach you to obey because that's what God wants from us and wants us to trust him and obey. And then that. We don't normally want to do that, but.
Yeah, and sometimes the situation could be so much more constructive. I think, I think when Sandy and I discovered this idea that, I don't remember exactly what the situation was or whatever, but it's like, if your spouse, think about the response, like something happens and it makes your spouse sad. If it makes her sad and she turns it to anger and she comes back at me, I'm going to come back and anger her. What are you talking about? And then that doesn't go well. If she comes back with sadness, I'm like, aw, I'm sorry. See, now this is a much more workable situation. There's a tender heartedness in it. And even like I said, Sandy and I are not big criers particularly, but but even we can still express sadness at whatever level we express it, and it's very constructive sometimes. So, anyways, go ahead.
I was just saying how it affects our children by modeling it and showing them that instead of being angry, the one time it comes to my mind very clearly is being really, really aggravated because not necessarily that my children were not doing what I expected them to do, what I really, really needed them to do, and I was trying to get them to follow instructions. I was trying to get them to help because I needed that help desperately at that point and could not keep going on my own. Hmm. And it just boiled over into this exasperation where I could not control it, and instead of hollering at them, I just burst into tears, and the looks on their faces were like, they stopped in their tracks and were just looking because I didn't raise my voice and I said, do you not understand that when I ask for your help, I am desperate for your help. I need you, and I need you to be here to do this. Not that I have to chase you around getting you. I need you to respond immediately. It was something as simple as the whole back of the van was loaded up with groceries for the next couple of weeks, and I'm trying to load sleeping children into the house, and you know what? They need this, they need that, and relying on the older ones who are, usually helpful. I'm like, why do I have to continue to ask? You know, you're so focused on yourself at that point that you run off, you want to play with your toys, you don't want to do anything. I said, I've been asking you for your assistance, and you're not. And that, from that point on, now I don't have to say a word. Hmm. Elijah remembers, and I'm surprised if he remembers. And as soon as we pull up and I open the back hatch of the door, they might start to run off, and he'll stop in his tracks without me having to say anything. He'll turn around and say, would you like some help, Mama? Yes, that would be very much appreciated, because I need you. For them to understand that, but
I think at times we forget we're always the strong ones, and we don't show them that we are just as fragile as they are when it comes to our emotions, when it comes to us needing help, and that we need to be conscious of them, that yes, they're little people, but they also are people.
Yeah.
And if we get into this habit of never asking or showing that side of it, then they think that in their minds, they're trying to live up to this huge expectation of, I can control it, and then it turns into anger a lot of times, instead
yeah.
of just showing, we have a weakness, we have a soft side of us that you can show too, that it's okay.
Yeah. So there's a situation where that worked out well, obviously, from the way it went. Any of these things can be overplayed. My mom overplayed crying a lot of times. In fact, I think that's one reason I despise crying and quit crying. Is my mom used to sit and cry and say, oh, I have such terrible children. Why do you do this to me? You know, and all my other brothers and sisters were affected by that. They, oh, poor mom. I said, that's baloney. She's just trying to put a guilt trip on us. I didn't. I was jaded and cynical, and that did not work with me. So, you know, anything can be overplayed to some degree. I had that with a mom. And then my dad was always saying, don't cry. Be a big boy. Grow up. And I never saw him cry. Between those two things, I don't cry. I mean, physical tears. I get sad, and I feel like I start to cry sometimes, but I don't. And I think it's built in from there, you know, baby. I don't know. Well, folks, it's been great discussion, but I went way, way, way late, so let me close in prayer, and we'll see you next time. Father, thank you for this time and for this opportunity to deal with a subject that's near and dear, obviously, to all of our hearts, and help us to deal with these things in an honorable way to you. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.